All right, last talk of the day. Exciting. I can feel the energy. Everybody out there? Yeah? Okay, so as you can see, I'm going to do this a little bit more old school, okay? I'm not going to use any slides because I want to talk to you, and I want to have probably a little bit of a different angle on the topics that we've addressed already today. First of all, a little bit more about Open North, okay? Just we've given some basic introductions. I want to give you a few examples of things that we've worked on just to give you an idea. Open North founded in 2011, really coming from kind of the Montreal open data activist kind of community. Our approach was very much around movement building, okay? And that's really kind of an approach that really kind of stuck with me. And issues of like scaling and culture shifts and systemic change, you know, this kind of approach to open data and the potential that open data represents to create new opportunities for collaboration and innovation. We've created open data standards. We spent a lot of time thinking about standards and the way that they can be applied to civic tech solutions. Okay, and I'll give you one example, which is OPEN511, which is a standard for road incidents. And there's actually one or two businesses now that use our standard. It's called reroutme.com, okay? So this is great, right? This is where we wanted to end up, creating a standard and then have the commercialization of data and business opportunities emerging from it. We also have an online budget simulator called citizenbudget.com, which we've sold to about 50 plus municipalities across North America. It's not an open data solution, but it's a nice way of being able to advocate for more transparency. So it's an online budget simulator that cities use to consult citizens on prioritizing ways that they can allocate resources, but it also changes the way that municipalities view data. So it's also a way of being able to kind of advocate for budget and fiscal transparency standards. Okay, so enough about Open North for the moment. Just want to switch about kind of the scope of the type of discussion I want to have and presentation I want to have with you today. Okay, so what we're noticing, I think, in Canada is that there's a lot of different pockets of initiatives around open data in different cities now, right? I mean, there's in Montreal, we're seeing like MTL data. In Ottawa, we're seeing Open Data Ottawa. In Toronto, there's a range of them, including the Civic Tech Nights. And that could go on and on and on, right? And we're also seeing municipalities and different governments having their open data portals, policies, a lot of goodwill, a lot of initiative, right? But then, how do we connect the two here? How do we scale what's going on at a very, very local level? Because a lot of people are concerned with things that are closest to their needs, their everyday issues that they deal with. And how do we kind of scale that initiative and our skill set to be able to solve kind of bigger kind of national problems, national issues? And there's no shortage of them, right? So that's kind of my lens here. So I'll draw from, you know, and I was able in preparation for this talk to speak to, you know, some collaborators and activists and friends, you know, in different cities. So I've also kind of asked them a few questions about leadership from the open data community and why they're not engaging on, like, you know, at the federal level with some of the data sets that are now more and more increasingly available to the public. Okay, so I'll touch on that as well. But first off, I want to talk about the open government partnership. Because I think it's it's not just me, but you know, this is really kind of the global organization, okay, that brings together states, okay, so national governments, to make commitments on open government, including open data, okay? And it's something that at the local level, okay, with users of data such as yourselves, I feel like we don't know enough about the open government partnership, and we should. Okay, because it has a lot of different impact on the way that we standardize data in terms of policies, in terms of licenses, in terms of infrastructure, and also in terms of the networks and communities of practice that are using open data on so many different fronts. Okay, and as part of the OGP, governments have to produce their national action plans. Canada has done two iterations of its national action plan, and this year is an opportunity for citizens to, like ourselves, you know, in a broad sense, developers including, to be able to have an impact on those that national action plan. Okay, so this is very important because it creates the policy framework that the government then uses, okay, to prioritize the way that it articulates its commitments towards Canadians at large. Okay? And within the OGP community, you're seeing a range of different communities of practice around data, okay, around open data specifically, such as like open parliament, okay, so a lot of people are thinking about legislative data, a lot of people are thinking about fiscal transparency, agriculture data, you know, electoral boundaries data. So the OGP is this kind of like a huge network around the world, okay, that brings civil society, governments at different levels of jurisdiction. Okay, it's quite important. And, you know, I've already kind of explained why I think it matters to kind of this audience here today. But one thing that might surprise you is that Canada is actually a leader internationally on open data. Okay, it was really behind the, and a driving force behind the International Open Data Charter, which you may or may not have heard about, but that's like a really important kind of document that, you know, gets government to commit to not just a set of principles, but really some guidelines that really shapes the way that we look at open government and open data. Okay, so it's a big picture stuff, but that can have real repercussions at the local and regional level. So it sets the approach that government takes, you know, in making more data accessible to the wider public. Let me just go over like some of the iterations and some of the specifics of the government's the Open Government Action Plan that it articulated. So from 2012 to 2014, you know, Canada became a member, I think, in like early 2012, if I'm not mistaken. And we're really seeing kind of some modest kind of beginnings, right? It was, you know, committing to an open government directive, for example. It was looking at open government license, obviously. And then looking at, you know, making the data that it already knew that it had more of, like, available to the public, okay? So not necessarily going into necessarily new data sets, but Canada is known for having a huge amount of data available because of geospatial data, okay? So like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of data sets through GeoConnections, through NRCan, National Resource Canada, a lot of that data is available to the public. So compared to other governments in the world, we have a high volume, but we know that volume isn't necessarily kind of the only criteria that we want to use in terms of the quality of data that we seek, right? So after setting kind of, you know, these types of commitments in the first iteration of its action plan, in the second year, you know, like, because there's like a there's a mechanism whereby you have independent reviewers that look and critically assess the commitments of their own governments, you know, there was a mobilization that took place to say, well, actually, you guys could do more. Okay, and to give credit to the team at Treasury Board Canada, which, you know, has an open government office or secretariat that deals with this, you know, they really kind of took the opportunity to kind of bring forward a more kind of really using the opportunity to push forward, okay, on open data and open government. So, you know, what we've seen since like 2014 is looking at, you know, establishing open data principles, but then also looking at ways of harmonizing licenses across different jurisdictions, across different provinces. We have a huge, you know, challenge in Canada because of our geography, right? We need to work extra hard to be able to connect different governments together at different levels, right? So, in aligning the Canadian commitments to to international standards, it also had an opportunity to convene and to play a role in making sure that, to work with different levels of jurisdiction to look at ways of harmonizing licenses, which is actually a key thing. And we've seen this actually kind of reverberate in Quebec with, you know, Creative Commons 4 license adopted by Quebec, Montreal, Gatineau, Sherbrooke, the Quebec government at the provincial level, right? So those are positive things that really have an impact when from a user perspective of data and the solutions that you want to create. What else? I mean, the government also invested in, you know, being able to create these big kind of hackathons type of events on a yearly basis, which, you know, for better or for good, they still kind of bring a certain level of visibility to the open data and to the open data community. It acts as a convening point. Whether or not that's a sustainable model, you know, that's like a separate talk, you know, that I could give. But, you know, I think it's what they call CODE, the Canadian Open Data Challenge, or experience rather. You know, it's a good kind of way of being able to get people excited about open data. But I think what we're seeing right now, and, you know, I've been kind of advocating for open data for several years now, okay? And, like, at first, you know, you're really talking about, you know, what are the benefits of open data? And often you kind of were confronted with people that kind of looked at you like, what is open data? But now we're really, I feel, at the kind of the end of the beginning of the open data movement, not just in Canada, but also kind of internationally, right? A lot of governments now are on board. A lot of governments have open data portals. They have their policies in Canada. We're over 50 different municipalities now that have that type of infrastructure. So now they're really looking at the demand side of open data, right? They're still struggling a little bit with, like, the supply side. There's a lot of more work that they could be doing. But I feel like it's from the grassroots now that we need to kind of connect in a much more effective, kind of networked way, which we haven't done before, okay? Because we've been so focused on small issues in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our cities, right? But then how do we scale that? And how do we scale that? How do we scale up? You know, how do we scale kind of wider, right? To connect ourselves together, and then how do we scale deeper as well? Okay, so how do we look for, you know, rich sources of data that then enable us to develop solutions that are way more detailed and way more, effective, okay? For that, that's really the demand, okay, that can come if we're able to kind of adopt a scaling mentality on these three different axes. Okay, so I mentioned, you know, some colleagues and friends that I've spoken to in three different cities, asking them the basic question about, you know, why aren't we looking at federal issues more, and what are some of the challenges around leadership in the open data community in Canada and being able to connect with one another and look at regional and federal issues? Well, first of all, and you won't be surprised by this, discoverability, okay? Where's the data? You know, like, a lot of people don't know where to find data sources that could actually be useful to solutions that have a potential of interoperability, of looking at different levels of jurisdiction. Relevance, okay? So, you know, there are, from a business, maybe, you know, business sector perspective, we're not necessarily finding data sets that would be complementary to, you know, our business models, for example. And then also context. It's, and this is changing, okay, but I feel like we don't necessarily have as much access to data managers and data producers to enable us to be able to situate the solutions that we have to better understand where that data comes from, you know, what is the purpose and, you know, how it's been created, how it's been handled in the past, what types of solutions, what types of problems have been tried to solve with that data set, okay, and so access to data producers and data managers is something that you don't often see. But that's kind of changing, because I think there's a lot of cities now that, you know, where you have these open data leads, okay? So these, like, you know, public servants that, you know, now manage open data files. And they're kind of taking on an ambassadorial kind of role, where they're kind of reaching out and participating in events outside of, like, the 9-to-5 that they're usually kind of confined to, right? And that's kind of a bit of we're talking about cultural shifts. You know, it's not always easy to kind of explain to a public servant, you should come over the weekend. It's like, well, that's after my working hours. Well, it's like, well, you know, come, because there's a lot of advantages to you coming, and it changes the terms of collaborative kind of solution design as well. And then there's an advocacy deficit, I feel, and this is what I'm hearing also from, you know, different friends, in the sense that we don't necessarily view technical solutions from an advocacy perspective. And I'll give you a couple of examples about that, okay? So how do we adopt a multidisciplinary perspective, right, when we're trying to solve an issue, and how do we build a campaign around it, okay? And there's some really good examples in Canada of this, especially around the extractive industries data, but then also with the nonprofit sector initiative in Ontario, okay? But that advocacy piece is not something that we necessarily think of when we think of open data or we think of open data standards, but that's also a very effective way with the right people to build an initiative that kind of demonstrates the demand in a way that has a bigger impact than a technical issue, okay? Okay, and when I was consulting my friends, you know, they were also talking about, well, we don't meet as we did before. So in Ottawa, you have the Open Data Book Club. So, you know, a book club, you meet on a regular basis. Everybody, you know, kind of reads the same book. But in this case, it's really looking at the same data set. And then you come up with your own ideas, project ideas. You work on it for a month. You come back. Then you report back to your friends. You know, you have an interesting discussion. And then you you select and vote on the next data set that you want to work on for the next month. That was working really well for some time, and they were meeting on a regular basis. The person at the city in Ottawa would come and attend those meetings to kind of give context to the data set. Really great model, right? But then in terms of diversifying people who would participate in it, they were finding that, you know, it was not necessarily the same people, but, you know, they wanted to grow a little bit more. So what they've done now is that they've co-organized events with the government itself. And a good example of this, and I didn't know about it, but I thought it was quite exciting, is Connecting Ottawa. Okay, and this is, I'll just read this out because it's easier, in collaboration with Citizenship and Immigration Canada. So this was an invitation. We are inviting immigrants, employers, and people working with newcomers to join us for a day of exploring how new technology can make settlement easier. Very, very timely issue, right? Obviously, with the migrants and newly arrived Canadians. So the Open Data Book Club and the Open Data Ottawa community then co-organized and brought their added value in terms of their lens, their technical lens, with an open data perspective to trying to solve these types of issues that really have, you know, or potentially a really big impact on the livelihood and integration of newly arrived Canadians. Okay, so, you know, to step out of our usual kind of safe spaces where we work together, right? There's an opportunity to kind of step outside of that and then to negotiate a new space, a new container, right, for collaborations between different communities of practice together, okay? So it's really cool that the Citizenship and Immigration Canada was willing to do that and was open and receptive to that. Okay, what else? I want to give you a couple of other examples. Yeah, I spoke already a little bit about the Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, right? So this is really about mining, coal, oil companies, right? And their reporting mechanisms, okay? Big demand to be able to have more transparency internationally. And there was, you know, some good leadership actually that came out from a coalition that included an organization in Canada or that had a chapter in Canada called Publish What You Pay. Okay, and so collaboratively, and this was a very strong advocacy campaign, okay, but with a strong technical component. Okay, so they brought in experts and said, we want to make more reporting data available, but then how do we standardize that? Okay, so they actually led to the creation of standards around reporting mechanisms from the extractive industries. Okay, and in Canada, the Extractive Sector Transparency Measures Act, ESTMA, okay, was adopted, and now they're configuring the details of those reporting mechanisms, but we know that it's going to have an impact on taxes, royalties, fees, production of entitlement, bonuses, dividends, infrastructure. So that's a hugely interesting data set, right, in a standardized way, but coming from an advocacy campaign for more transparency from the oil, especially the oil sector in Canada. And what's interesting about the EITI is that it's also about Canadian companies working internationally in other countries, right? Where in countries that don't necessarily have as robust kind of reporting mechanisms or transparency and accountability mechanisms, right? So it's to be able to entice Canadian companies to abide to the same standards that they would apply here in Canada. Okay, so here's a good example of an advocacy campaign that led to standardized open data. Last but not least, and you know, I think I want to use this example because it relates to the social sector, the nonprofit sector in Canada, and a good example of kind of a way of being able to become an ally to a community and to add a technical lens to a set of issues is data coming from the social sector, the nonprofit sector, and an organization based here in Montreal called Powered by Data that worked with the Ontario Network of Nonprofit Network, ONN, to design a data strategy for the Ontario nonprofit sector. So this is quite cool, you know? And again, in Canada, we're one of the leaders in this. So this is Powered by Data, which actually is a nonprofit, but you know, who the members are actually own a business called Aja. So they've worked with data. It's an open data business. But then they saw that there was potential to create an entity that would then help the wider sector kind of appreciate the value of open data and then accompany it by convening a range of different actors together to add that lens from an open data and standardization perspective. Obviously, we're looking at the ability to track, you know, impact of, you know, nonprofit activities, to standardize kind of measurement matrix. We're looking at being able to trace trends, maybe moving from sharing data to open data to standardizing data, right? So all these types of nuances now are part of kind of a systemic approach in the social sector in Canada. And again, this is something that, you know, Canada can be proud of being a leader in that field as well. So, you know, I was thinking of, you know, what types of issues nationally, you know, exist or, you know, contemporary right now that create an opportunity for, you know, people that have a very, very valuable and highly kind of technical skill set to be able to contribute that to big issues of the day. And one of which, actually, it's through a conversation that I had recently with Discourse Media out in BC, is around the truth and reconciliation process, okay, with First Nations in Canada. And one of the ideas that they're thinking about, you know, is how to mobilize knowledge of what is working to support reconciliation and drive change across the country. For sure, there's a data, you know, lens that can be applied to that type of problem solving, okay? So that's another good example of, you know, looking where there's not only political momentum, but also civic momentum, you know, to be able to kind of lend our skills to be able to add value in the way that we look at a problem and look at, you know, accessibility of data for that set of issues, the quality of data, and then to develop a strategy that supports a process like that, I think could be very, very rich. And obviously, you could have, you know, Roberto made a presentation earlier from a data journalist perspective. Obviously, there's a connection there with, you know, increasing the raw resource that can then enable us to report more effectively on the truth and reconciliation process in Canada as well. So that's, you know, that's the kind of the gist of the talk that I wanted to give today. Some key kind of basically kind of takeaways or maybe like even a call to action, if I may, would be, learn more about the Open Government Partnership if you don't know about it, because it really kind of frames the way that the Canadian government is approaching not only open governance, but also its commitments towards open data, which has an impact on, you know, a whole range of different sectors in Canada. This year, there's going to be the civic component of, you know, how to engage a range of different stakeholders to inform the commitments, okay, with a lot of opportunities to present different ideas, okay, different types of commitments. So if we don't participate, then the government is going to set its own priorities. So I'm sure we all have ideas that we could contribute to this. And then to engage more with the, you know, with different levels of jurisdictions that are already kind of committed, okay? So that have open data portals, that are trying to put together responsive mechanisms to get more feedback about, you know, prioritizing data sets. We don't use those enough, okay? So we need to kind of get more people to demonstrate the demand for it, because there is, you know, I don't think we should take the, we know that open data is, you know, something that, you know, is unavoidable. It's something that, you know, we believe in. But if we, from a government perspective, if they don't see a return on their investments, you know, then you lose that extra staff, you know, that you could talk to. You lose, you know, the investment that could make data more discoverable. You lose that investment of the staff who can train public servants internally to break down those silos, you know, to make cities more effective. So let's continue to make, you know, the demand clearer. And then look out for opportunities to maybe work in different initiatives, you know, from an advocacy perspective, or maybe think about, you know, how could there be an advocacy lens to a problem that you're trying to solve with data as well. Thank you very much.
All right, so thank you so much, John Owe. We've got some questions coming online. From the live stream. This is from Dan. I work as a developer for my municipality. Our new mayor has an interest in open data initiatives. The problem is I'm the only person and would be implementing and maintaining the full solution myself. If we were to try a pilot project, what would be the most basic implementation of an open data initiative that could be considered in quotation marks open data and demonstrate whether or not open data is for our municipality?
Sure. So, good question, and it's good question. So, I think it's the idea of scaling and starting with a pilot, I think, is a good one. I think that's a good approach, right? But instead of kind of selecting a data set or a series of data sets, and then kind of, you know, facilitating a maybe a space or maybe putting forward a challenge, you know, why not create an opportunity to convene? Right, a range of different stakeholders to be able to be more responsive. I think being more responsive to demand is important. It's a show of respect also for a lot of people that are probably already thinking about open data and ways that it can be used. So, because, you know, you always get into the issue of, well, you know, what are the most high value data sets out there and which one should we put out first? So, you know, my answer to that is, well, you know, the ones that you have that you could put online, put it online. You don't need to know that somebody or already anticipate that somebody will find a solution or work with it to put it online. We want governments to be open by default, right? That's our right, you know. And that entails like a shift in mentality where you know, public administrators or public servants aren't the owners of data, but they're responsible for data. And part of their responsibility is to make data available in a structured, updated, machine-readable format automatically. So that's kind of like a segue to, you know, just to say to the person who asked the question, call a meeting. Get people excited about it. You don't need to have, you know, a specific issue, but then create a space where you can convene a small group of people, right? And then, you know, ask what types of issues, what types of problems, you know, do we want to solve? And then look at the data that underlies it and then go and look for it. Instead of putting the data first, look at the issue and look at the data that underlies it.
Hi. So you were talking about your monthly meetings with your group, where you were brainstorming for ideas of how to use these data sets. Is this somewhere online where we can get inspired? Like, can we get the resources somewhere so we can start from somewhere?
Yeah. I mean, I kept it old school for the session today, but there's a number of links that I can share with the organizers that we can make online. Yeah, there's like three or four that I know that are very active, so I'll happily share those afterwards. Sure.
Thank you very much for the talk. It's more like opening this open data discussion, and it's impressive what you guys have been doing. Congrats. I was just wondering, and this is something I have mixed feelings about, that this open data that is, I would say, like it's our taxpayers' money that would open it, and the government would open it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. Is there any potential of a licensing or something behind it where the data used, the open data used, has to be used and open as well, or something where the data that a company, for example, will use and add value on top of it
right.
can still be reused by the community? A little bit like a open sourcing, licensing, something like that.
Do you have an example of a...
I'm actually wondering, like, say, like, Google Maps, for example, mm-hmm. would use a bunch, or Bing Maps, something like that, would use a bunch of open data to add value to their mapping system,
yeah.
but then we cannot access it because it becomes, like, their private data.
Yeah.
Is there any licensing talks regarding the use of open data that would be given back to the community in a way?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm clear, actually. It's not super clear in my mind either. Actually.
I mean, I don't think I'll be able to answer kind of your question precisely because there's so many different licenses now that exist. And to be honest, like I haven't spent enough time over the last like year to follow all the different iterations of licenses. But that's an issue that you hear often. You know, like if I create something, if I use data, you know, for commercial purposes, you know, can somebody then kind of reuse my solution that is intended for my own business interests? If this is what you were saying. So honestly, I'm going to kind of avoid answering that. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of debates about it, but I can probably look up different sources that would be useful to you to look into it. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Awesome. Any more questions from the room?
Thank you for presentation. In business environments, data is used for strategic and operational decision. Is it the case with open data in governments on different level of governments? Because like you mentioned, it's kind of difficult for them to find use case or issues.
Sure.
But I guess they have... Every day they have kind of decisions they need to make, and it's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the estimates, right? The estimates from a commercial perspective of open data, the numbers that are thrown around are huge, right? And I'm not going to even quote them because they're just like so big. You know, billions and billions of dollars, okay? But what is that really? How do we, you know, what is the actual value of open data from a business perspective, which I think is what you're asking. And, you know, the range of different types of data sets that could be useful for a business, and here, we need to be able to identify the demand for it. And that's something that we haven't done systematically in Canada, okay, but there's, you know, a couple of projects that I know of that in the next like few months that are going to be launched to be able to do that. So you need to ask the business sector, what data do they need that they don't have access to that would be useful to them? To me, that's like kind of the basic question that needs to happen, which we haven't done in a very kind of systematic way. But, you know, off the top of my head, I mean, you know, data like postal codes or geographic data or weather data, you know, all those types of data sets, you're not necessarily going to build your business model on them, but they have a complementary value to the service that you're offering, right? And so, you know, that's I think there are very, very few businesses that are only going to use open data, right? That's the key thing. So it's making, like, being able to have access to data that adds value, you know, from a business intelligence perspective. So, you know, postal codes or weather could be very important, you know, depending on which business you run in terms of predictive analysis or these types of things, right? So, you know, there's a lot of examples out there, and again, I can share a few online afterwards.
All right, thank you so much, Jean Noé.